Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Near FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, we'll be joined by Shane Keegan, a member of the Dundalk coaching staff, who will reflect on Dundalk's qualification last week for the group stage of the Europa League. And later in the show, we'll be talking sports books, and Michael Hopkins will join us to give us some sports book recommendations to get us through the winter. But first of all, on the show today, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by a member of the Dundalk coaching staff, Shane Keegan, and Shane is joining us on the line. Shane, thanks a million for joining us. How are you today?
No problem at all, Patrick. All good, yeah. All good.
Yeah, so you'd quite a week last week, a really, really incredible victory. Only the third time an Irish team has got to the group stage of the Europa League. How special of a night was last Thursday?
It was brilliant, Patrick, absolutely, no doubt about it. Look, you could argue, I suppose you could argue that the real heavy lifting was possibly done the previous Thursday, you know, in with regards to the strength of the Sheriff out that we beat in the previous round. I mean, that was, I suppose, that's where the big shock really came in. That's where we were well and truly underdogs, and that's where we certainly delivered our best performance in Europe this year. We were terrific. The boys were absolutely brilliant on the night. It created a very strange situation last week where you're heading into a playoff game to qualify for the Europa League and you're heavy favourite.
Yeah.
And, you know, that obviously brings its own challenges, but thankfully the lads managed to deal with the pressure of the occasion.
Yeah, and I know Filippo, when he was talking after the match, he was saying that the players were a bit nervous. So was that a factor? Because as you said, it's so unusual for an Irish team to be going into a game like that and to be favourites. Was that a factor with the players going into that match?
Absolutely, no doubt whatsoever. No doubt whatsoever. Look, we were well off our best in that game. Look, it's fantastic to be able to say that you're well off your best and still winning a game 3-1. But we were well off our best, definitely. And I would put a huge amount of that down to nerves. You know, I don't know, had the combination of such a big game added to the expectation that we were just going to swan through. Can be difficult to deal with, and we probably did struggle to deal with it a little bit, so we did, and it affected our performance. But still, you know, we found ourselves in a decent position heading into the half-time break, being one up, and then to get that early goal in the second half was fantastic. I know we shipped one as the half went on, but I think that second goal was the key one, no doubt about it, you know.
Yeah, and it's a great looking group for you. Arsenal are the standout draw. You must be really, really looking forward to pitting your wits. It's your first experience in Europe, would I be right in saying? So you must be looking forward to the challenge of kind of pitting your wits against the likes of Arsenal, and you have Molde and Vienna as well. So it's very exciting few weeks coming up.
It is, Patrick. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, look. I suppose what the group has done is it's thrown up the best of both worlds for us, really, in that we've got our glamour tie against Arsenal. Be brilliant to take them on in the Aviva and obviously over in the Emirates. And then, look, there's a lot of hard work to be done, but, you know, you are looking at the other two opponents and kind of half fancying giving it a rattle. Look, we'd be massive underdogs against either of them, both home and away, but at the same time, it's manageable. Well, maybe it could be my team, my words now, but
yeah.
If you're looking at it initially and you're thinking, you know, are these two sides a million miles ahead of Sheriff? I don't know if they are. Look, if we deliver anything below our Sheriff performance in any of those games, well then I think we could be on the wrong side of a bad result. But if we can get to that level that we showed against Sheriff, against Rapid or against Molde, well then, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we could spring a shot, you know.
Yeah, and you've a role within the club as an opposition analyst. When does the work for Dem Games begin? Has it begun already, or are you just focused on the domestic action?
Yeah, no, has well and truly begun already. So it has very, very much so. And yeah, look, you've nailed it. It's a bit of a balancing act, because the one thing that I can't do, the one thing that the players can't do, the one thing the club can't do is allow this to overshadow the domestic league. I mean, at this moment in time, we're not qualifying for European competition next year. And that, you know, rectifying that and making sure we do qualify for Europe next year is just as important as anything we try and achieve in the group stages of the Europa League. So while, yes, I have started to look at Rapid and look at Molde and look, there's, I suppose at this stage there's not a huge amount of looking needs to be done at Arsenal other than watching matches today, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very, very important that that doesn't come at the detriment of preparing properly for our domestic games. We've passed on Friday night. We played Hearts on Sunday. Again, we were nowhere near good enough, to be honest with you. But that 5-day break from Hearts to Pats is the biggest break we'll have for the next 2 months. Every other break from there on is going to be 4 days or less. So the games are going to come thick and fast. And, you know, really what we need to do is try and put some positive results together so that we're kind of in a good place and able to enjoy Europe rather than heading into Europe while also looking over our shoulder and going, Jesus, you know, things aren't looking great here for qualifying for Europe next year.
Yeah, and that role as an opposition analyst, I'm reading a book at the moment about Bielsa, which is probably the most fascinating person in terms of attention to detail. But what, in terms of, say, for example, for the you mentioned the game against St. Pat's, what level of preparation, is it a full week preparation and much work? Would you mind giving us a sense of the amount of work you need to do to prepare for a match like that?
Yeah, there is. Look, there is a huge volume of work. Look, I suppose, okay, there's not quite as much goes into it domestically as there is European-wise, and that's simply because the base level you're starting from. You know, our players, we would know an awful lot more about Pat starting off, obviously, than we would about let's take Molde, for example. But you still, the content of the presentation, the amount of information that goes into the content of the presentation is still pretty much the same. So it is. You're looking at the four kind of phases of the game, you know, how do the opposition try and play out? What do they like to do when they get over the halfway line? How will they try and stop us playing out? What will they try and do when we get over the halfway line? Then you're looking at the counter-attacking phase, both for and against, and then obviously you're looking at set pieces, which is a huge, huge part of it. And I suppose that's the general breakdown of all of the presentations. They run across those eight phases, regardless of whether we're playing Pats or Arsenal. So having the correct information and essentially just being able to paint pictures for the lads that help them, you know, plan and know what they're heading into, know where the opposition's strengths, know where the weaknesses are. Look, you mentioned Bielsa, obviously he did that amazing presentation when the whole Spygate thing was going on. Yeah. I don't know, I couldn't claim to get quite to the level that he does, but he did give a good idea of the general outline of how it all works, you know.
Yeah, and the new management team, it's incredible thinking what Filippo has done in the short period of time. How have you found working with them? Because it was a surprise appointment, but they seem to have been settled well into the club.
They certainly have, yeah. Look, he's I suppose his two biggest strong points are one, his structure. He's an incredibly structured and organised man. And then the second one is, for a fella who hasn't ever really managed at this level before or managed adult teams, he has a fantastic self-belief. He knows exactly what he wants and he doesn't second-guess himself. He knows what he wants and he tells you what he wants. He tells me what he wants. He tells the rest of the staff what he wants. He tells the players what he wants. Nobody's left in any kind of... There's no grey areas here or there's no... Well, you know, yes, he'll seek your opinion, absolutely, but at the end of the day, he as I say, he's very, very strong-minded. And that was a vital, vital kind of characteristic for him, because if he did come into a role such as this where people were second-guessing him before he ever got the job, if he was second-guessing himself, he would have been lambed to the slaughter. But he absolutely doesn't second-guess himself. He has real conviction in his beliefs, and that's really done to him.
Yeah, and Shane, you also present an excellent coaching podcast, How to Win at Domino's, in association with the 42.ie. And I've been listening to a couple of the podcasts over the last few weeks. You had Derek McGrath, Pat Lamb, Padraig Harrington, Stuart Lancaster. Hopefully we'll get to hear a few more over the next few months. But if you had one dream managerial, I know you're passionate about coaching, if you had one coach in any sport that you'd love to kind of pick the brains. Is there anyone, any particular coach that comes to mind?
Cheers, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah, Jadie, sorry about that.
I've probably been lucky enough to do it with a couple who certainly would have been top of my list.
Yeah.
You know, you've mentioned Derek McGrath there. You know, in terms of coaches in Ireland, I would have Derek right up there as one of the very, very best. In sporting circles, a lot of people would be very familiar with Gary Keegan as well.
Mm.
You know, he's a phenomenal reputation to be able to get to speak to him. Look, outside of our own country, I suppose the one that I probably bought into the most or tried to have read the most from or would align myself in terms of his philosophy, and I'm genuinely not just saying it because he's in good form at the moment, but Carlo Ancelotti, for me, he's been one, as I say, everything I've read and kind of in relation to, co-wrote a fantastic book called Quiet Leadership, which is definitely, you know, probably in the top three books I've ever read in relation to sports management and sports coaching. He to me, yes, look, easier said than done, but I'd love to sit down with Carlo and pick his brains for a while, yeah?
Yeah, and before I let you go, Shane, you've been very generous with your time. Would you like at some stage in the future, I know you're really enjoying your role at Dundalk, would you like another crack at the top job sometime in the future?
Ah, yeah, look, be lying if I said otherwise, I probably would. Now, when I say I would, I'm probably talking, you know, 3-4 years down the line again. The role I'm in at the moment, I'm absolutely, you know, really, really love, really, really enjoy. It's a fantastic, absolutely fantastic dressing room in terms of the personalities of the players, in terms of the camaraderie between the staff. You genuinely could not ask for better. And look, let's be honest about things, Patrick. If I'm going back into management and going into where I'm the main man, look, things didn't end well for me at Galway. I'm probably coming back in at first division level and looking to prove yourself kind of all over again, almost as I did with Wexford. It would take a bit of adjusting to get used to operating at that level when I'm kind of spoiled with everything that we're spoiled with at Dundalk at the moment. But in saying that, do I see myself kind of doing it again over in 3-4 years' time? Yeah, look, I probably would fancy another crack at it somewhere along the line, all right, yeah.
That's brilliant. Listen, Shane, thanks a million for joining us this evening, and the best of luck. We'll be keeping an eye. I think I speak for most people in the League of Ireland circles, so we'll be rooting Dundalk on, and hopefully you'll have a few good results to give us something to cheer. So thanks a million for joining us, and the best of luck for the rest of the season.
Cheers, Patrick. Thank you.
That's great. That was Shane Keegan, a member of the Dundalk coaching staff, filling us in on all things Dundalk. Great series of results recently, so thanks to Shane. We might take a piece of music now, and we'll be back after that. We hope to be joined by Michael Hopkins, who's going to talk where it's we're going to be facing a long winter with the current restrictions, so we thought it might be a good idea to talk sports books. So Michael is a big fan of sports books and been reading a few, and he's going to give us a few recommendations. So we'll talk to Michael in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Beyond the Back Page on Near FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. Well, I mentioned at the outset, it's with the dark evenings and the winter coming, and of course the unprecedented situation we're facing into this year, 2020, with the current restrictions, we won't be going too far this winter by the looks of it. So it's a perfect time to get stuck into a good sports book, and I've been reading a couple of good ones myself, and I'm delighted to say, to help us talk about a few sports book recommendations, Michael Hopkins, a regular contributor to the show, is joining us on the line. Michael, how are you today? How's things?
Not too bad, Paddy. I hope you're well yourself.
Not too bad, no. So we might start, we were chatting off air, like getting a sense of books you're liking, and you're currently reading Champagne Football. How are you finding it, and how long are you into it? How many pages have you read, and what do you think of it so far?
I'd say I'm about halfway through it at the moment, Paddy. I am enjoying it. I think a lot of it is obviously was out in the media there not too long ago as well, so it's quite familiar. it's just such an eye-opening experience. And when you're reading about the situation in the FAI, it just, you get flashbacks of all these incidences. Like the CAS report is mentioned again. We'd obviously the huge restructure and talk of restructure around the FAI after Saipan, and then just the detail that's contained with Delaney's reign and the FAI. It's just absolutely astonishing. And it seems like such an unwieldy ship to try and steer. I've been in football coaching for about 10-15 years. I've gone through the coaching process with the FAI, and I found the FAI very scaragone when it came across the dealing with things. I can see where the mixed messages in Irish football come from. You've got so many vested interests at board level with the FAI that they just don't have control. They don't have the level of control that a football association should have. But then when you see the type of things that went on what they had control of, you wonder to yourself, the misgivings aren't misplaced by the SDFL, DDSL and League of Ireland clubs. You know, it's an absolute mess. It doesn't fill me full of confidence that we're going anywhere too fast, unfortunately, because I don't think we have the finances to get behind football and make a huge change, you know. But I'm enjoying it. It's an interesting read. Definitely picking up purely for, even if you haven't got an interest in football, pick it up for the soap drama that is John Delaney and the sheer gall of the things that he got away with.
It is a fascinating read, and what struck me, it's an amazing read in terms of, I suppose, the structure of a corporate organisation, and it just seems that there was no one to rein in the main at all. It really, really, really incredible. And Michael, you mentioned there you're involved in coaching and you're kind of passionate about soccer, and I'm sure there's other people in your social circle that give a lot of time voluntarily to Irish football just for the love. It must be very frustrating for you reading this when you see what yourself and so many people right throughout the country, that the errors and the effort they're putting in. Then we have would you really, really make you angry when you think when you're reading it?
I think it brought a lot of things home for me, Paddy. I tell you, I would have been of the opinion for years that the cost of having a career in football in Ireland was too high for what you get from it. So, like I said, I was involved in underage soccer up until under 19s, from right the way to the bottom, all the way through, and I would have done as far as the C licence. Now, any further than that, you're getting into paying, you know, €1,000 and above to four-year education in football. And my attitude towards it is, I could do that. I could go on, I could study, I could potentially go the whole way. There's no guarantee of a career in that for me afterwards. Whereas if you paid similar amounts to go to college and take a third level degree or similar, the chances are you would have some sort of better career aspects or opportunities afterwards. So what I always imagined was, why don't we take a different approach in Ireland and subsidise some of these coaching courses, or incentivise some of these clubs to take people on, give them a part-time wage. So give people an opportunity to have a career, not only in soccer in Ireland, but in sport in general. And I always wondered why the FAI never did that. But now I look at the finances, and I look at what was going on there, and I look at the huge amount of debt, obviously, that they were in with the Aviva, and how that was a white whale. And I can see why. I can see why they're never bold enough to make these changes and never bold enough to step outside of the norm. And everything became a cash cow. So any money that was being raised from coaching, yes, it was going back into coaching, but it was also being used to facilitate debts. So that's why, and it's just disappointing. It made me realise that any hope I think they had before of the structure changing in Ireland and us grasping the nettle and being different to the rest of Europe just wasn't going to happen. It's very disappointing.
We might move on from the FAI because I think it might make us both angry talking about it. But we might talk about your next pick. That, of course, is the book by Paul Paul Rowan and Mark Tye, really, really incredibly researched. It will make you angry, but it is really, for a fan of Irish football, and indeed, as you, Michael, said, for anyone that's interested in just even just corporate governance, it's a really, really fascinating read. But you sent me this suggestion for a good read, The Chimp Paradox by Steve Peters. Steve Peters is a really, really highly respected sports psychologist. He's worked with Ronnie O'Sullivan, the British cycling team. I think he might have done some work with the Liverpool team. Can you tell us, Michael, a little bit about the book and just why you liked it?
Well, I studied sports psychology in college, and I'd had an interest in it. And I'd read books by Malcolm Gladwell and books like Bounce, which would often go into the theory of just repetition and sort of purposeful practice or those types of things. But I always had an interest in how sports people or elite athletes would manage pressure or manage, you know, things that would seem almost very difficult to us would become automatic to a sports person. So what struck me was watching any level of sport, when you're watching it on the TV, it can seem like, oh, I would understand what to do in that situation. Mm. Or you might scream at the TV as to why a certain person made that decision at that moment in time. But when you actually watch live sport, you realise that it's the speed isn't reflected on the TV. So the ability to manage not only the speed of the sport, but also the pressure that they're under at that moment in time was immense. There was actually a friend of mine, we started playing golf on the odd time, and golf's a great sport for understand how it really is only you against you in that moment, and how you manage your own mindset and how you manage how you deal with certain situations. And I remember that Padraig Harrigan had said that he had read The Chimp Paradox, and basically how it breaks it down is it gives an understanding of the human brain and how we manage stimulus and how we manage our thought process. So the chimp in this instance would actually be the emotional brain and the sort of primitive brain that someone would engage. So you might see an emotional reaction in a situation of an elite sportsman where it looks like they've lost control. And when they get a moment to calm down, the other areas of the brain called the computer or the logical part of the brain, they kick in. And what it does is it trains elite sportsmen not to respond to the chimp or the emotional brain, or to train it and get it to a point where they're able to engage the logical part of their brain and tame the chimp or understand or exercise that part of their brain. So it just keeps them calmer in those situations. And it means that they're able to better manage the pressure. And it just gives a huge amount of examples. Like you said, he's worked with elite sports. He worked with the Liverpool team, Steven Gerrard in particular. He's worked with elite golfers. He's worked with Padraig Harrigan, as I said. And it just gives a great understanding of how psychology and how simple things in psychology can give you a better understanding about how you will manage high pressure situations. There's a lot of parallels between elite level sport and doing well in business and so on when it comes to pressure and managing time and so on. So for anyone who's in a high pressure job or struggling even at the moment during the pandemic, when our mental health is at a struggle, it's well worth a read for understand how best to manage your own mental health and how your brain works and how it processes information. So it's definitely worth a read for anyone who has an interest in that, you know.
Listen, Michael, that's great. Unfortunately, we could do, I had another few books that I'd love to chat to you about. And I know, I remember last year you suggested a book about Dutch football, Erotic Genius. But unfortunately, I've ran out of time. So we might grab you on at some other stage. We no doubt will be talking to you in the future about League of Ireland anyway. So we might have you on again talking about sports books. Briefly before we tonight, of course, Ireland against Slovakia, a big match. Do you see us getting through?
I liked what I seen from Stephen Kenny's teams. I know people were looking for an end product, but I was very impressed with how he managed to get them to play that way immediately. I would be 50-50, I have to be honest. I'd be 50-50 on whether we can actually go through or not. It all depends on if we can score. And we looked a little bit like we couldn't put the ball in the net in the friendlies. So I think if we get a goal early, I think we'll do well because we can keep the ball a lot better than we can now.
Yeah.
If we go behind, I think it'll be difficult, but.